Okay. Yeah, welcome to the LaRouche Youth Movement meeting. My name's Valerie. I know most of you here, but for those whom I'm just meeting now, I'm a full-time organizer with the youth movement here in Montreal, and I'm going to start by giving a quick briefing, an overview of some of the most relevant developments that happen over the course of the past week. So, there are a few things, however, I just want to mention at first, although I will not be discussing fully, because I rather stick to those things which are of most crucial relevance. So, and some of those things which I won't be going through in depth, but that you should keep at the back of your minds, which did happen over the course of this week and last, are these riots that have been breaking out in Tibet, and this entire destabilization now being run against China occurring in Tibet, as part of an overall general destabilization of Southwest Asia. The other is, that is actually coupled with this proposed treaty, the Lisbon Treaty, which is now circulating Europe as a proposal to undermine the sovereignty of all European governments and render them subordinate to a higher authority that would operate in Brussels. Okay, so we're actually seeing an attack on the idea of the nation-state system. And this, you know, this and its proposal to unite NATO with the European Union and have a central power conducting military operations of all the countries in Europe. Anyways, this is all being proposed right now under this Lisbon Treaty, which we are fighting, pretty rigorously right now in all over Europe. So these are some of the developments that have been occurring that are part of the major crisis which is occurring right now internationally. And that's what I want to discuss a little bit more in depth tonight. So you've probably already heard about the collapse of one of the biggest banks in the United States and in the world, Bear Stearns. Okay, so these guys, they went under and they were bought up for literally pennies on the dollar by JP Morgan Chase after being bailed out by the Federal Reserve. And this is not merely significant because of the collapse of Bear Stearns as such, but more so because you have a carte blanche bailout by the Federal Reserve. Meaning, Bear Stearns, which is not even a chartered bank, goes completely bankrupt, and the Federal Reserve and European Central Bank have now decided that they are going to issue an unlimited amount of cash to bail out this bank and any other bank that goes bankrupt and follows Bear Stearns into the hole. So, you know, this is unprecedented in human history. And we are following the footsteps of a major banking crisis, which hasn't occurred to this magnitude since in about 600 years. I'm talking about the banking crisis that led Europe and the world into the Dark Age. In the Middle Ages, the collapse of the Lombard banking system. So, you know, you can think of trying to fill a sieve a bucket with holes in it, trying to fill a bucket with holes in it, which obviously doesn't work. But this is the method being employed right now by the Fed and by these big bankers in the central banking system of Europe to try and patch up the crisis. But we can know that this type of a reaction is obviously not a solution to the crisis, but it's a Band-Aid cover-up. And from the work that we've been doing for the past many years on the collapse of the banking system, which LaRouche has been warning about for over 30 years now, we know that Bear Stearns is merely the first of many banks to follow. In other words, the entire financial system is disintegrating under our feet right now. So, as a consequence of this policy of just printing the money like this to try and bail out these banks, we're seeing what we've been warning about, which is a major hyperinflation in the price of goods, starting with raw commodities and food. All over Asia right now, Asia, Africa, South America, the price of food is increasing. It's unbelievable. Some food prices have doubled in the past few months. An average price inflation for China is 18% in the last year. It's the same for many countries. You can look at Bangladesh, Pakistan. The entire region is just soaring in inflation. The other thing is we're entering into a great crisis of food shortage, of grain shortage, where there are now riots in Pakistan, in Indonesia, in places in Africa because of grain shortages. Where now recently there was a report that came out in Pakistan, there's about a 3 million ton grain shortage. That's a lot of grain.
Where is it?
Pakistan. Hmm. All right. And this is just, you know, this is indicative of the systemic crisis which is now hitting the majority of the world. Right? In Egypt last week, there were riots outside of lineups to get bread, people pulling out their knives because there's not enough bread. People don't have the money to buy, to import food. Countries like China, the Ukraine, Kazakhstan, Russia, Argentina are all having to put taxes on the exporting of grain products because they can't afford to import the food anymore. Right? So they're going to tax the exporting so that their farmers can't afford to export and their food stays in the country. So realistically, the only alternative right now to global warfare coming out of this type of a crisis in the midst of a major economic meltdown is the reorganization of the entire financial system. And that is what we are proposing. So on March 12th, last week, LaRouche gave a webcast where he addressed the heads of governments around the world from Washington, D.C., on the nature of the crisis and on the alternative and the solutions, the proposal that we're putting forth. And something of significance that he went through in this webcast was an outlining of the causes of our economic crisis today, which he pinpointed as, in brief, three things. A major phase shift which occurred in 1971 when Nixon unpegged the dollar from the gold standard and replaced Roosevelt's original Bretton Woods fixed exchange rate system with a floating exchange rate system backed by the U.S. dollar, meaning that currencies, the value of currencies around the world, were no longer pegged to gold, but they were pegged to the U.S. dollar, which fluctuated depending on the demand for the U.S. dollar, which was obviously high because the entire oil trade was now done in U.S. dollars. It's a major move that was done in the early 70s.
What's the name of that that process or that trade? The oil
spot markets?
Spot markets. Mm-hmm. So the spot markets were created at that time?
Yeah. The futures market and the spot market. And the most important thing was that it was all to be done in U.S. dollars. You keep the demand for the U.S. dollars high. Okay, this is really significant turning point because it meant that the policies of globalization were now going to be fully implemented and were going to be the policies that were going to dictate the trajectory of our future. And so around that same period, early 70s, some of you probably already know this, but LaRouche entered in a debate with a British Keynesian economist named Abba Lerner. And over the course of this debate, Lerner admitted that if the population of Germany at the time would have accepted Hjalmar Schacht's fiscal austerity policies, then Hitler would not have been necessary. Okay? So LaRouche is in a debate with this guy, and corners him against the wall to such an extent that this guy, Abba Lerner, really sticks his foot in his mouth and admits that if the population of Germany would have accepted the policies of Hjalmar Schacht, the economic advisor to Hitler, then Hitler wouldn't have been necessary. But since they wouldn't accept those types of fiscal austerity policies, then you needed a fascist dictator.
I'm going to read some quotes from the class. I'm going to a bit more questions.
Okay. So the point that I wanted to make with this is that there's a certain importance of this is that Lerner, he represents a network of oligarchs that have an intention, that have a specific intention of imposing fascism and of bringing about this policy called controlled disintegration. And so it was really this realization that you actually have a network of people that are intended on bringing world relations back to the way that they've always operated, with the exception of the last few hundred years there after the revolution, but that you have a network of people that are determined to bring the world back to the way it was run for forever by empires. And this is really what provoked LaRouche to start the organization for the purpose of leading this fight against this intention to return to imperialism. So, our fight really has been to overthrow this current system of globalization and to bring about a new financial system based on the policies of FDR and the true spirit of the American system. So it's, you know, it's really... that it's really for this moment that's occurring right now that this organization was originally founded, which is kind of an interesting idea, right? That the entire organization was aimed to accomplish what we now have the opportunity in front of us to accomplish. You know. So that's, you know, that's a really, that's a really exciting idea. That the door is now opening for us to be able to do that. Okay. Now, a few days ago, Lynn put out a statement, which is now translated in something like over 10 languages and counting, called... Doom has struck. 3 steps to survival. We're going to be distributing this in just about every country that we can step foot in. And hopefully all of their capitals.
Yeah.
Pardon?
Is it French version?
Yeah, we've got one right here. Okay. So obviously he does enumerate his 3 steps, which we're putting emphasis on right now. And those are the immediate implementation of the HBPA, which is the Homeowners and Bank Protection Act legislation that we're pushing for in the U.S. Congress to deal with the immediate housing crisis. Right, the foreclosures that are occurring all over the United States, and to begin a process of reorganizing the bankruptcy of the banking system. So to declare bankruptcy, freeze the insane amount of foreclosures and people that are getting evicted, freeze that process, and begin to reorganize the value of these mortgages and the debts on these mortgages. The second one is what we call a 2-tiered system. And that would be to bring back this concept of the fixed exchange rate. One at where you would be able to issue loans for purpose of reconstruction at very low interest. And... for loans that would be issued at a for different types of investment would be at a higher interest. So those that are for public infrastructure, these types of projects would be at a 1-2% interest, and any other type of loan and investment could be at between an 8 and something like 7 or 8. Or 9, something like that, percent interest. So, I could discuss that a little bit more if people have questions. Because there are a few things involved in this. What we mean by fixed exchange rate system, these different concepts.
So bankruptcy reorganization.
Yeah.
And halting foreclosure.
Yeah.
One, right?
Yeah.
fixed exchange rate.
Yeah.
Two. And three is the 2-tiered system?
Well, the 2-tiered system, the fixed exchange rate is within the HBPA. But then out of that comes a necessity to rebuild the economy. For that, you have to issue large amounts of loans. But not all of them are going to be at the same interest rate.
Right.
because you want to facilitate the building of infrastructure, so you hardly put an interest rate on that. For anything else, then you can put an interest rate that would be a little bit higher. Okay, and if people have questions on this fixed exchange rate system, we should discuss that, because that's one of the key elements of this new Bretton Woods that we're proposing, which is the title of a proposal for a new financial system, calling it a new Bretton Woods, simply because the original Bretton Woods was where Roosevelt's system was crafted in the 1940s. Okay, right? Because look, we want to engage in long-term trade agreements with other nations, which is right now literally impossible, because we're in a floating exchange rate system. So you don't know what the value of another country's currency is going to be from one year to the next. It all depends on what the demand for that currency is. So if there's a run by the people with money on that country to collapse their currency, then you got screwed investing in them. Right? So we want a fixed exchange rate system so you can engage in long-term trade agreements with other countries and not have to worry about, you know, losing on your investment, these types of things. The third point is this four-state solution, meaning we take this proposal, we go to Russia, China, India, we take the same faction in the United States, and we have a discussion immediately on the reorganization of the financial system. These four countries are especially important because they are the most developed economically, and also they've got the largest populations.
Well, I wanted to add that on this idea of the four-state solution, I think it's significant that LaRouche is talking about these four countries at the same time that The Economist, which is sort of the voice of Britain, is attacking them by the week. Mm-hmm. This week it's China, the new colonialists. Last week it was on Russia and their economy with a bear eating oil.
Mm-hmm.
And the one before that was something on India, like, why is nothing happening there? You know, sleeping giant or something. Yeah, so you can see the attack of those four nations, and of course the weekly attacks on the United States. But you see the Economist, which is held to be the voice of these financial interests, systematically attacking these countries, trying to create situations.
How would we guarantee that these loans would be put into use properly with developing countries? Because a lot of time the state doesn't even have like control over like individual like territories. Sovereignty isn't always vested in the state.
You mean, how do we know that the government is going to use those loans for these?
He's talking about foreign governments.
Uh-huh. Right. Well, this is why it's a three-step proposal, right? Because you can't actually have the first two steps without implementing the third, which is this discussion that has to occur. Because you can't just, as the United States or any country, really say that we now are sick and tired of globalization and this system, and so we decide that, you know, we're out and we're going to reorganize on our own. That, you know, that's not going to work. You need some type of motion, some type of strength together, an alliance that's going to organize around a new system. And so the principles can be worked out in discussion over time.
I would add one thing. We're also going to leave the oligarchs out of all the decision making. That's also going to clear up a lot of problems.
Sounds hard.
They don't really have too much to say. Their strength is in our weakness, essentially, our failure to recognize that these guys are a bunch of bankrupt jackasses.
Whereas the opposite isn't true. Our strength is not in their weakness so much, or as in the capacity to perceive principles that work and reflect reality.
Okay. So everybody should take a copy of this before leaving and read it carefully on the metro or something. And you know, just so you know, although I could go through some whatever. We're gonna be taking this all over Montreal, but hopefully all over Ottawa as well. We can use as many as many hands and people to help out, distribute and organize our fellow parliamentarians that surely need to know about this. We need to be invited into this new discussion that's about to take place. Because, you know, Lynn's ideas right now are circulating around the world. And there are about 100 or so websites that have posted up LaRouche's response to a Russian general, Ivashov. LaRouche wrote this paper, a couple of pages, going through the economic crisis and our proposals, a little bit like this, except more in depth, and wrote that to in response to something a general in Russia wrote a few weeks ago, and it was posted all over Russia on all kinds of media outlets and websites, right? So these ideas are definitely circulating Russia. We also know that they're circulating China, because last November, LaRouche had a meeting with several Chinese diplomats, and you know, the whole event was reported on. And there were articles in the three major Chinese newspapers talking about Lyndon LaRouche as a world-renowned economist that had the ideas that would take us out of this economic crisis, right? And so the other interesting development is that LaRouche last week or the week before, I think it was last week or so, about a week or a week and a half ago, week and a half ago, or 2 weeks, anyways. He went to Italy and spoke to the Italian parliament. And so over the last few days now, you have two Italian senators that have come out and endorsed Lyndon LaRouche publicly and his policies, right? If only that would happen in the United States, but I guess Italy's, you know, it's a good start. So, you know, that's really motivating. Here, I'll let you know what one of them says, okay? So this is a guy, this was March 15th. This is Senator Lydia Menapass, who recently stated a public dialogue, recently started a dialogue with LaRouche, and has now endorsed his New Bretton Woods proposal in a statement which he released on March 15th. Mrs. Menapass wrote, quote, "Italy, like the world as a whole, is facing the most serious economic and social crisis since that of Weimar Germany. And, as then, there are two possible solutions: to defend and guarantee the welfare state and the victories earned by workers, by creating a new financial and credit system which revives the real economy and penalizes financial speculation. The Bretton Woods promoted in the United States by the economist and democratic leader LaRouche, modeled on that of Franklin Roosevelt. Or to give in to austerity measures and wars imposed by new forms of dictatorship." You know, that's a good start. is the other one. Right, March 18th, okay, so 2 days ago. Senator Oscar Pedderlini, a candidate for the Italian Democratic Party in the general election of April 13th and 14th, he issued the following statement, saying, quote, "I am very worried by the situation on the financial markets and the worldwide economic crisis. Throughout the world, families and small investors are damaged by the crisis because the various types of investments they make are destroyed by the games played by international speculation. For years, together with Lyndon LaRouche and the Solidarity Movement, I have been calling on Italian institutions to work for a reorganization of international markets. The fact that every city or town has to establish rules for stores and vendors while international financial markets are left untouched by political authorities is unacceptable. There is too much speculation and too many people who make money on the backs of others. Therefore, it is urgent that governments act to propose and hold a global conference, especially among the most industrialized nations, modeled on Bretton Woods, to coordinate and regulate international markets and thus return stability and trust to the economy." That's just a part of it. Right, but it gives you an idea of what people are thinking. You know, there's also the finance minister, the ex-finance minister of Italy now, Giuliano Tremonti, Giulio Tremonti, and he's now actively organizing for New Bretton Woods, right? And he's calling on heads of state to come together for a conference to discuss a proposal to reorganize the whole financial system, right?
So who is that?
This is, his name is Giulio Tremonti. He's the ex-finance minister of Italy. He's also running to become the next finance minister as well. Right, so, you know, this type of thing is going on, you know. I mean, there are a few things that I think we should think about. Now, one of them would be to seriously begin to ask ourselves how it is that Lyndon LaRouche has been right this whole time. Right? He's been warning about this for 37 years. And meanwhile, he's been called crazy, kook, shut out from the media, you know, totally slandered because of what he's been saying. And yet, now the situation is unfolding exactly as he has warned. So to some extent, this is credible, and it's worthy of an investigation on our part, to figure out what his method is. How is he the most accurate economic forecaster ever recorded in history? What is his scientific method for doing that? Right, because it really is in our method that allows us to be right when all of our critics are, you know, totally wrong. And I'd also say that we would have to ask ourselves what it is that is keeping our governments and governments around the world from acting with us, from immediately joining this fight for a new financial system. What is that? What is holding them back? What is the axiom which is keeping them from admitting that the entire system is undeniably bankrupt and that we should go for a global economic recovery program as epitomized by a Eurasian land bridge to be the cornerstone of global reconstruction. And perhaps while we investigate the fallacy within our leaders, it will serve as a reflection on ourselves, right? And that we investigate what it is that is that we investigate the real parasite which we are facing right now. This that we understand what the real threat, the real nature, or the parasite which you're facing actually is. And that is this sophistry which is infesting the entire Congress, the Parliament, and our entire generation, and is most likely it is the root of the reason of everyone's excuses for why they can't dedicate themselves to this fight to save mankind. And so this sophistry, which is really our arch enemy in this fight, this sophistry, our own sophistry, can most accurately and completely be defeated by and most like adamantly, I guess, be defeated and outflanked by a strong grounding in science. The development of a scientific method. And this is really the work that we're doing when we're not out on the streets organizing people. You know, so if this is a new concept to you, you know, what the heck does science have to do with defeating fascism? Then you should come and work on some of these ideas. You know, we work on this every night and every weekend on science and music, right? And on these, how does a great mind come to make discoveries? How did some of the greatest geniuses of the past make these scientific discoveries? Because a lot of them were made in times where the popular opinion of the masses, the majority of scientists at the time, were saying something completely different. The majority of accepted scientists were saying the complete opposite. You know, and so it was almost like, you know, it was the black sheep scientist, the one that was, you know, outcast, thrown away by all of them, that fought through the sophistry of popular opinion of the masses and was able to make a discovery that benefited all mankind. So that method is really what we're trying to get at, and it's the core of LaRouche's method in economic forecasting. So I would invite all of you to come and participate in some of that work that we're doing in our office on music and science, and then to come out and organize the population around this change that now has to occur. Because it's not guaranteed that we will win, but the chance that we can is guaranteed. So I just want to leave you with a few things, okay? One thing is something that Lynn said a few days ago. He says, now the meaning of the life of each among us hangs upon our willingness to serve humanity by warning, while there is still time, of the actions which they must undertake, which they must urgently take. Our urgent duty now is not to beg for our succor. Our duty is to mobilize humanity to act in defiance of the still popular beliefs by which our nation and much more besides would be self-destroyed. Right. So how do you break free of these? How do you break out of the chains of popular opinion? Right. And how do you actually decipher amongst all the chaos what is actually right? What is actually truthful that you can hang on to and fight for? Right. Phil said this very, very honest thing in the briefing the other day. He said that popular opinion in a crisis is never right, because the popular opinion is mined in the system that just crashed. Right? So look, whatever you're doing, whatever you're involved in right now, you should keep in mind that everything in the world right now is being dominated by the financial crisis, and that your reality is going to be affected and is going to be changed by this in the coming weeks and months ahead. And so it is well worth committing to an investment in figuring out what it is that we're going to do about this crisis, because there are too many people that really don't know and have this kind of a radical Jabbokin type idea of what to do about it. Right? And so the last thing that you should keep in mind that Lynn said a few days ago about what it is that we're doing is that this is not a campaign like we've ran many campaigns, right, on different fronts. This is not a campaign, it's a revolution. And this is not the way that you have to look at it, it's the way that you have to engage in it. So yeah, let's get on to why the comment s'appelle? Pascal's got a... Oh, okay. Well, Pascal's got something planned for us.